Hi, welcome to Redwood Wonk. I'm Matthew Owen.
And I'm Eric Kirk. This week we discuss the deportations, the attack on judicial independence, and whether TDS is a mental illness. Good evening. You're either watching or listening to Redwood Wonk. My name is Eric Kirk. I'm with Matthew Owen. We are talking national political news of the week. And we're going to start with the politics around the deportations. We'll talk about the fact that Trump's administration has openly defied a court order to deport a group of people alleged to be Venezuelan gang members. We can't be certain that they are. They haven't had due process, but they've been deported, not to Venezuela, by the way, but to El Salvador, to be held in an infamous prison after El Salvador has plenty of space because their government arrested, I think, tens of thousands of people, many of them falsely. And so they've got so much prison space that we're just sending them off. We're not even sure that's legal. It's all going to be challenged in the courts. But as we discussed last week, and we'll discuss a little bit more, the Trump administration is taking the position that, hey, we don't have to listen to district court rulings. So, Matthew, you want to chime in on what's been going on?
Yeah, the Trump administration used the Aliens Enemy Act of 1798 to deport 147 Venezuelan alleged gang members. But like you said, Eric, they didn't deport them to Venezuela. They deported them to El Salvador's Kika mega prison. When you go there, they shave your head. You get a white T-shirt, white skivvies, like white underwear, white socks and white shoes, no pants, no pockets, no nothing. And pretty much it's probably one of the most hardcore prisons in the world. As you said, Eric, they didn't get due process. We don't know their names. We don't know who they're allegedly charged with. We don't know anything. They just said, we want these people out of here. Second thing, they're having their attorneys pull stuff from centuries ago. Aliens Enemy Act was last used against Japanese to send them to interim camps during World War II. We were at war with Japan then. As far as I know, I checked, we're not at war with Venezuela right now. So I'm not sure how they're using the Aliens Enemy Act. And then for the Colombian student, Mahmoud Khalil, they used the Immigration Nationality Act of 1952. He led pro-Gaza protests at Columbia University. There's no record of him doing violence or doing vandalism or having any ties to Hamas. However, they're just coming out with saying, yeah, he's a Hamas supporter, he's out. Once no due process, no facts, no evidence, they just said, we don't like the guy. It's bringing up a chilling point that the State Department and the Trump administration is taking the viewpoint, if you're here on a green card work visa or student visa, you don't have a right to free speech that the U.S. Constitution gives you. If they don't like you, they can just deport you at a whim because of they want to. And if anyone's not frightened of that, you better be.
Yeah, there have been some interesting things that have happened over the past week or that have been reported over the past week. They've been happening. One East Indian woman with a doctorate who was teaching self-deported because she just says, I'm not going to put up with this. I'm going home. Which means we could be losing people of value to the country, not just in terms of what we like their company, but in terms of contributions to the society. I mean, this was an educated woman, but they didn't like something about her, so they just deported her. Some people are having a real wake-up call. There was if you have a green card, if you leave the country, you're taking a chance. You might not make it back in. There was a incident in which a youngish a couple in Wisconsin left the country. Actually, didn't leave the country. They went to Puerto Rico, which is part of the United States,
right. Much territory.
Yeah, and then on their way back in, she was separated and arrested. She had a green card, but she's got hearings pending because she did not cross the Rio Grande or anything coming in illegally. That is actually a crime, but she simply overstayed a visa. She lost track of the time. She didn't do it. She had a child with this man. She had basically assumed the role of mother to his 12-year-old child from another marriage. a little bit of irony here because the guy voted for Trump and is now regretting it. But basically, they just decided, hey, because even though there was a hearing pending to determine whether or not she could get relief for having overstayed the visa, they just found on the database, you overstayed the visa, you know, however many years ago, we don't want you, you're out. So if there's any reason that, you know, this is my advice to anybody with a green card, if there's any possible reason you can be, you know, held and deported and kept outside of the country or held at Guantanamo Bay or some other facility, pending that, don't leave the country. And in fact, maybe just don't leave the country regardless, because it looks like they're looking for every excuse. Right. Trump wants to get his numbers up, his deportation numbers up. He's still behind Obama. I mean, anyway, there's a lot of other news as well, and there's starting to become some resistance. But Matthew, what else?
Well, DEI used to stand for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. And now stands for, in Republican lexicon, deport every illegal. And like you were saying, Eric, if you have a visa that's expired, you're now considered an illegal. I've got an issue of a friend of mine is Hispanic. She's not sure where her father was born. She was born here in the United States, but the Trump administration wants to get rid of birthright citizenship. If they can say your father wasn't born here, technically it's fruit of the poison tree, you're an illegal also.
Right.
That's kind of scary. What do you do with people who have been, you know, highly educated, they're members of society, they have great jobs, they work, they pay taxes, they're involved in the community, to have the Trump administration say, we think you're an illegal because your parents were illegals?
It is looking like the Supreme Court isn't particularly impressed with Trump's argument about birthright citizenship. We've discussed that on this show. There are three exemptions to if you're born here. And by the way, we aren't the only country that does this. There are about 30 countries that have birthright citizenship. It's it is not unique to us. But it's Trump is the administration is trying to argue that illegal aliens would have been considered an exception too. There wasn't even a concept of being an illegal alien when the 14th Amendment was passed. People right. went back and forth across the Mexican and Canadian borders at will. There was nothing there. It really didn't become the concept of somebody being here illegally didn't start until the Chinese Exclusion Act about, I don't know, 15, 20 years later. So they don't have any law to support it. And it's looking like the Supreme Court majority probably is not going to go Trump's way. One of the district court decisions was actually by a Trump appointee. Another was by a Reagan appointee. So it doesn't. And they're all rolling their eyes. They're saying there are three exceptions that were in the Civil Rights Act of, I think it was 1866, right after the war. One was for invading troops. If they had a child here, they wouldn't be a citizen. The other is children of diplomatic corps. They aren't citizens. And then there's one that's now moot. It was if you were a Native American and a member of a tribe that had independence from the United States of America. But that changed in 1924 when we passed an act that made all Native Americans citizens, whether or not they were in an active tribe. So it's probably going to fail, but they are pushing it. And and like I said, this woman had, yes, she overstayed a visa, but she was having hearings set up to get relief from that, to say, I did overstay, I apologize. And I want to, and here is, my argument as to why I should be able to have a permanent residency. And now she may not even get that opportunity. It's just all pending in court. And we'll see what happens with the courts. And then we'll see if the Trump administration even honors the court decision. And we'll talk about that in the second segment.
And Eric, I got a couple of questions for your great legal mind. Does a federal circuit court judge have the right or the power to overturn a presidential executive order?
I want to talk about that a little bit more in the second half, but yes.
Okay.
The second segment, because we are going to talk about separation of powers and the system of checks and balances. And if Trump has his way, it's kind of ironic that they're quoting Oliver Cromwell as to the reason why they should be able to do what they want and not have to listen to district courts. There is a theory they only have to listen to the Supreme Court. There's nothing in the history of our jurisprudence to say that.
Well, that's what they're doing right now. They're throwing spaghetti against laws and the courts, trying to see what sticks. If they don't like the decision of a federal circuit court judge, they're going to appeal it. And you brought this up before. Does the Supreme Court really want to hear 38 cases against the Trump administration this year alone? Because that's what they're trying to do.
There's new suits being filed every day. I mean, because of stuff they're doing. There's a database of them. I don't currently have it, but that you can, if you Google database of lawsuits against the Trump or against the administration, you can find it. I think actually close to 50 at this point. And by the way, there might even be more, because the plaintiffs have already obtained 32 injunctions as of yesterday. And the Trump administration has only prevailed in preventing the injunctions about 10 times. And by the way, the judges in some of those are saying, we may grant the preliminary or permanent injunction later. We're just not seeing grounds here. We need to see more evidence. So they could end up losing almost all of them. But, you know, with regard to the deportation, I mean, we've got a shortage of immigration courts right now. And ICE seems to be the one agency that DOGE is not trying to defund.
Good. Hey, can we bring up one thing? And this is the thing that really upsets me about when they talk about Democrats. If you're an illegal immigrant here doing violent crimes, I think 99% of the people, regardless of which side of the fence you're on, say you're out. You're gone. Bye. If you can't abide by our laws, especially if you're an illegal immigrant, deport them. I don't think Democrats have a problem with that as a whole. I think most illegal immigrants are law-abiding people because they know they're on thin ice. They don't want to, like you were saying earlier, they do not want to draw attention to themselves. They just kind of want to lay low, work their job, have their families, and that's good. The last thing they want to do is start selling drugs, beating on your woman, murdering people, because if you do that, you can get out hell out of our country. And most people agree with that.
Yeah, although there is some concern that they leave the country and come back, it may be that we should criminally prosecute them here. People have been arguing that they do their jail time and then they're deported. But right. It's, I mean, you know, this, of course, it was an accident. It was a crazy accident. But there was about 8 years ago, a man, homeless man, it got a hold of a gun that some idiot left in his car unlocked. And the guy was playing around with a gun. It shot and ricocheted off a bridge. It's like the bridge just south of Pier.
San Francisco, right?
Yeah, in San Francisco, right off the ferry building. It was a horrible incident. And so people say, well, why wasn't he deported? He was deported six times before this happened. It's not a solution. It was a failure of the mental health system and a lot of other things. And he was acquitted of murder, convicted of manslaughter, which is probably, you know, justified. I know a lot of people are upset with that, but it's the problem is that, you deport them because they're suspected of having committed a crime, but then they can get back. They can come back. It's not that hard to get in. You know, contrary to popular belief, the wall really doesn't stop that many people from getting in. There are a lot of ways to get in.
Eric, here's my another question for you in the legal sense. If you or I did something and a judge says, no, you're wrong, I'm going to overturn this, you cannot do that, and we gave him the middle finger and did what we wanted to do, what could a judge do to us? You and I as a common citizen.
They could hold us in contempt, which means they could fine us. They could even jail us up for a certain period of time. It's not even a punishment. It's to say you're going to be in jail until you honor this order, or such as you know, release the you know, account of where you put the money that you stole, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
You know, and it's so that can happen. And there can even be worse possibilities. You could be criminally charged in some cases.
I'm thinking Steve Bannon and Peter Navarro, Trump's former people from his 45th administration, both had what do you call when you get an order to appear before the court, a summons. Yeah. What's that called? When they give you a thing, you got to appear.
An order to show cause is usually what it's called for contempt. And Bannon spent some time in jail.
Both Steve Bannon and Peter Navarro spent 3 months in jail for giving the middle finger to the courts. What can the courts do to the Trump administration? Obviously, they can't put the president in jail. Can they put the Secretary of State in jail?
I want to, we should again talk about this in the next segment, because we're going to talk about what courts traditionally have to do. But the short answer is, I don't know. They can't arrest Trump, but could they fine him? And could they attach an order to his, you know,
he'll never pay it,
his property? I mean, you know, yeah, but if they attach it to the property, then he can't refinance it. But I'm going to talk a little bit about what their options are and what's going to happen.
Okay.
In the next segment.
If you have any questions or comments, email us at redwoodwonk@gmail.com.
You can listen to Rub and Wonk on KZZH 96.7 FM every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 p.m.
Okay, so that takes us to the next topic, which is related, because as we said, there was a court order saying you cannot deport these people without due process. And after the order was issued, the administration flew this group of Venezuelans out to El Salvador, just a blatant ignoring of the order. And they are taking a position saying, well, why should one district court for one district be able to issue an order that affects what the president can do in the whole country? And it's a good question, but it's because they are representatives, not just of their jurisdiction as to where things are filed, but they are federal judges. You know, there was a case, and we have a judiciary. We have three branches of government in the federal government. You've got the legislative, made up of Congress. You have the president, and you have the judiciary. And the judiciary is, you know, they say, well, why should the judiciary have so much power? Well, first of all, they're given that much power because they can't take initiative on their own. They can only address an issue, a case or controversy, when it's brought to them. So it's kind of a passive power, but it's absolute. And in the case of Marbury v. Madison, which was decided in 1803, Congress had tried to impose some power or to say that the Supreme Court needed to do something. I'm not going to go into the details. Supreme Court said, no, that's not in our constitutional province, and we don't have to do what Congress says. And furthermore, the courts are, as because they always have been in common law, which is the context in which the Constitution was written, are the arbiters of what is constitutional and what is not. I want to get back to you on that Marbury v. Madison. I'm running into all kinds of people online. You see, what's Marbury v. Madison? And we don't teach civics anymore. That was a high school. I didn't have to go to law school to learn about it. I learned about it in high school. It was basically the case that established and has only been challenged a couple of times since then, that says, yeah, we can't pass laws, we can't take action, we are the arbiters of the Constitution. When we make a decision, it's final. You don't get to question it. Now, are you having questions about that, Matthew?
No, I was just saying that you seem to be confused here again, Eric. You seem to think we have a separation of powers between the executive, judicial, and legislative branch. When the Trump administration is doing a consolidation of powers, we now have one branch of government. the Congress has already bent the knee, and they, I don't even think we have a Congress anymore. And now the Trump administration is trying to go after the judges, saying, if you rule against us, we're going to impeach you.
Yes.
I didn't think impeaching the judge was a thing.
Right. Well, no, judges have been impeached, but only for corruption, crimes, misdemeanors, and treason.
So if I rule with the law and you just don't like my ruling, you can now impeach me?
Exactly. And Justice Roberts, who is not one of the liberals, I identify the breakdown is four MAGA, two conservatives, and three liberals right now. And the conservatives are the swing votes. But Roberts issued a statement that he rarely makes, saying you're overreaching by making that suggestion. You don't get to impeach a judge just because you don't like the ruling, period. Right. End of story. And that has a lot of people supporting Trump angry, saying he should just not have said that. He did. That wasn't his business to say that. It is his business. It was. He was also the person who said when the Trump administration, like very early, like the second or third day, sent out emails to all of the judges federally. It came from the top, and it's pretty well certain that it's Roberts is saying, ignore those emails. They don't mean anything. And right. And telling the administration to stop sending them out. They're not your employees. And but this is a big attack on it. And this refusal it's not even refusal. This defiance of an order, of violating order, is the first time it's happened in the history of our country. It is the absolute first. There have been a couple of times when they were close once. And what President Andrew Jackson did, I think, was still really inappropriate. But basically, the Supreme Court ruled that Georgia was wrong. You are bound by the treaty. You cannot violate the treaty with the Cherokee Nation. And so, tried to prevent the Trail of Tears. Jackson said, hey, we Congress and the president are also interpreters of the Constitution, defined Marbury v. Madison. But what he did was different from what Trump is doing. He refused to enforce it. He said, hey, if you got an army Supreme Court, go ahead and send it. That was wrong, but it wasn't on the same level as the administration actually violating an order. He refused to enforce it. And the second incident was Lincoln towards the beginning of the year. Issued an order revoking habeas corpus. Well, that's something that Congress can do. And that was a constitutional crisis until Congress said, oh, we just haven't gotten around to it. They issued one. Revocation retroactively. That's it.
So what happens when a judge rules against the Trump administration? They go out to the right-wing echo chamber, Fox News, Steve Bannon, and all these people say, here's this judge. This is his address. Go get a MAGA.
Yeah. I mean,
it's going to happen. Yeah.
That is scary. And judges, they'll get people. I mean, we already have a precedence for this. Johnson, the Speaker of the House, already interfered with a local judiciary thing. He shows up to Trump's criminal trial and outside says this is a sham, doesn't cite any evidence for it, but he shouldn't have even been there. It's right. Not up, he had no right to be there to interfere and undermine a judicial process. I wish Roberts had said something about that back then, but I think he's just finally reached his threshold on it. And so, as we talked about in the last segment, they do have some options, contempt, fines, and at a certain point, they're going to have to issue them. Apparently, this judge is livid, and he's demanding information that they're refusing right. to provide. Yeah, it's going to go to the upper courts, and the Supreme Court is going to have to make that decision. Go ahead.
Follow-up question there. What happens when the Supreme Court makes the decision and says, we want you to bring this information? When did this plane leave versus what time did the judge make his ruling? Why did this plane not turn around? And what happens when the Supreme Court says that and the Trump administration gives the Supreme Court the middle finger and ignores it?
Then we have a full-on constitutional
crisis.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, that means the rule of law has broken down. It means that the system of checks and balances that establish us as a constitutional republic are not working, period. It's ironic.
I got to jump in here, Eric. You're confused again. You seem to think we live under rule of law and under the United States Constitution. We live under the rule of Trump and now Musk.
Well, it's kind of ironic that in their statement, I forget which administration person said, oh, the courts are acting like Oliver Cromwell, and revolting against the president's authority. What's kind of funny is in response to Cromwell and, all of that turmoil, a new man named Thomas Hobbes wrote a book called Leviathan, which tried to argue that a society can only function if there is an absolute dictator. He didn't use that term, but he said a sovereign that there over which there is no power.
Okay. The other point I want to bring up is if you've been following the Republican town halls, they've gone from bad to worse to oh my God. As of right now, most Republicans don't want to get anywhere near the constituents because they know people are going to scream at them saying, why aren't you guys doing anything? And the second point I think I brought up 2 weeks ago is we're going to start to see Democratic congressmen go into red counties or red districts and doing town halls and inviting the Republican there who doesn't show up, but they want to say, we're here to listen to you. Tell us what's on your mind. And they're not going to scream at them. Or if they do, they're screaming because they're frustrated. But the frustration is starting to boil out. You saw Tesla's showrooms are being attacked. People are throwing Molotov cocktails through the windows. The showrooms.
No, they're just tourists. They're just tourists.
As Rick Wilson said, would you drive a Nazi car? Boycott Tesla.
I mean, it's and I know Tesla owners who are selling their cars.
My neighbor just did.
They do. They wanted to put it. They were thinking about putting a bumper sticker on saying I bought this before Elon went crazy or something. But it's a real problem. And Trump even wants to make it a crime to boycott. I mean, does that mean you and I are guilty if we haven't bought a Tesla? I mean, just, you're right. There are massive protests right now. After that fiasco in the White House we talked about a few weeks ago with Zelensky, Vance went on a skiing vacation to Vermont. I don't know why he chose Vermont. That's about as blue a state as you get, arguably bluer than California. They elect a socialist every 6 years. So it's just, but speaking of that socialist, by the way, he is Bernie. On tour. Yeah, Bernie Sanders. He is on tour in Republican districts and drawing, I think at least on one occasion, 10,000 people.
He's doing the Stop the Oligarch tour.
Right. And Tim Walz. Started off in three of the Iowa districts that were refusing to hold town halls, invited him, as you said, and I believe he's on his way to Arizona now. I mean, they are doing this, at least some of them. I'm going to talk a little bit more about this when I get to my prediction at the end of the show. But, there are people, a lot of people out there, including Republicans, who are genuinely scared about the complete fall of the Republic. And like you said, if it gets to the Supreme Court and they still just say, no, I don't have to do that, that's it. Then they've set the precedent of it. I mean, where we have a president that doesn't even care about the emoluments clause, right?
What you just described is not a republic, it's a monarchy.
Right.
We don't have a president, we have a king.
That's right. We have what Thomas Hobbes wanted in Leviathan, the absolute sovereign for which there is no nobody has any power over them. It was just as Britain was coming up with systems of checks and balances that we based our government on. And the king was in theory in power, but the king, as we know, had less and less power with each decade.
And our forefathers left Britain because of what?
Yeah, right. Well,
I want to get underneath the king.
Because they were exempting the East India Tea Company from taxation, and it was in fact a tariff, but in general for independence. I mean, that's they just didn't want it to be a part of a colony anymore because it was not a good deal. It is interesting. I mean, we got an interesting history in this country, right? I mean, the first communities that came from Europe were either religious fanatics or penal colonies, right? So we got this, you know, kind of thing going on, and then businesses came as things went on. But the idea of of checks and balances, where you've got three branches of government with different kinds of power, so that you have kind of a Newtonian thing to prevent absolute power from happening. And the power we need to be most afraid of is the president, because that's the one that has the actual practical power to make things happen, and the military and the rest. And yes, it's scary because he's already firing generals and admirals and people on the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and replacing them probably with loyalists. We'll find out if it comes to this. But he did pledge that we'll never have to vote again.
Right. And what happens when the president moves the National Guard or the Marines or the Army down to the southern border to stop the illegal immigration? There's something called the Commonwealth Act, where we can't use the U.S. military inside the United States.
Yeah, he could. I mean, there are emergencies that he can declare where it said, but it's. But to allow that to happen, he has also pledged, even he wanted to even do it in his last term, to bring the military into cities to shut down demonstrations violently. Right. Yeah.
I can say I've witnessed it twice in my lifetime. Post Rodney King riots, I was living in L.A. and I saw the National Guards on Wilshire Boulevard with M1 Abrams tanks in the middle of Wilshire Boulevard. You talk about something that's frightening, going, oh, my God. And then, of course, post 9/11, I was in New York, probably 2-3 weeks after the planes hit the towers. And there was police and National Guard every single block you went into New York, everywhere. I mean, they just sent tens of thousands of people. They wanted to make New York the safest city in America. So
it has. And the National Guard being misused has led to at least one tragedy at Kent State. And we have that. And it's supposed to be the governors that call out the National Guard.
Right.
The concern is that he might actually try to use other branches of the military.
That's my question. What happens if he sends the army down?
Yeah, he's not supposed to. The National Guard is supposed to be the domestic military version. But if he does, yeah, it's a coup. It's a coup that's not much different than from when the Soviets sent the tanks into Hungary or Prague a decade later. You know, it's, maybe he won't be as brutal, but I don't know. The problem, you know, we always say, oh, well, if it's not a communist or a fascist taking over, it's not really the ideology that leads to the abuses. It's the power. If you have absolute power, you're going to use it. It doesn't matter if you were a choir boy before you went and did it. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And
I'm waiting for that line there.
Yes. I mean, that's if there's no checks on it, then it's going to be scary, and people will do what they can and take to the streets, and it'll be horrible.
I heard an interview with Mark Cuban, the guy who's on Shark Tank. They asked him, what's the deal with Elon? And he says, Elon's the richest man in the world, and now he controls the president and effectively controls the country. And Mark Cuban then said those exact words, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Yeah. And he says, that's the problem with Elon and his ego right now.
All right. We'll be discussing this again.
If you have any questions or comments, email us at redwoodwonk@gmail.com.
You can listen to Rub and Wonk on KZZH 96.7 FM every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 p.m.
So we have this concept called Trump, what is the D again?
Yes, derangement.
Trump derangement syndrome. This is something that Trump supporters throw at any time there is a criticism of Trump or a belief that he is going to be a dictator. It's Trump derangement syndrome. It's been used since the first term. GDS for short. And the Republicans introduced a bill in Minnesota. It's not going to pass, but declaring that TDS is an official disease that needs to be, you know, addressed. I don't know, medically. I don't know. I'm not quite sure. Will they be allowed to commit people? Like I said, Minnesota is a blue state, even though it's a, some of its areas have turned more red in recent years, thanks to the Democrats abandoning white working class. But we'll talk about that another time. But it's not, it's still, they don't have the majority. That's not going to pass. But this is the type of thing they're trying to pass. They don't have anything else to do. It's not like they can lower the price of eggs or actually beef is taking off right now. But you know, this is what's used. Anytime you raise it, you say, well, you've got TDS. Now, you know, similar things have happened in the past. They didn't have an HDS in Germany circa 1933, but it was all conservative and moderate parties that passed the Enabling Act saying, oh, he's not that bad. You're overreacting. Right. This is the land of Goethe and Bismarck, and we're going to be fine, right? You know, it's just, it's the minimalization of it. And it's like, it's not about Trump. It's about what he's doing and about the actions that are happening.
And I'm going to hit a reverse on there. To me, Trump derangement syndrome is the mega nation that is part of the cult. They believe anything and everything he and Elon say. They don't fact check. I don't think they read. I don't know if they know how to read, but they just believe anything he says. And then Trump changes his mind by the hour. His first term, the stock market was everything. Stock market was going up, and that's because the Trump administration was great. Now that the stock market's going down, he says, don't bother the stock market. Only wealthy people own stocks. Forget the stock market. Then he's going to say, forget the price of eggs. Do you know what we heard during the 2024 campaign season? Swear to God, I heard the price of eggs every single day on a Trump thing. Today he says, I ignore it. You know, it's a bird flu. Nothing I can do about it. So, and these people just go with whatever he says. I think they have Trump derangement syndrome.
There is a, there was a chapter in George Orwell's 1984. Right. In which there were three mega nations in the world that were perpetually at war with each other, and I think they were Pacifica, I forget, and Eurasia and East Asia, right? And George, the main character, was in the Pacifica country in England, of course, and they were at war with Eurasia. And then all of a sudden, something happened where there was a switch, and all of a sudden something came over. They didn't know if it was based on something the rebels did or missing the signals crossed. But they all of a sudden we were at war with East Asia rather than Eurasia, and Eurasia was now a ally.
Right.
And not only that, Eurasia always had been an ally, and East Asia always had been an enemy. And what happens at it's at the beginning, I think chapter 8, I can't remember where, all of a sudden everybody runs around tearing down the anti-East Asia posters and running to the storage to get the ones for Eurasia. I mean, they're participating in themselves, in their own cognitive dissonance. And yes, that happens here too. He says one thing, he makes a pledge, and then, oh no, I never made that promise. You know, he never made that promise. And it's scary. It's scary to watch. It is the raw material for authoritarianism.
But also I'll say the right wing does something very well. They have words and they repeat them over and over and over again. Three words I've heard probably thousands of times recently is fraud, waste, and abuse. Mm-hmm. It's hard to go an hour watching. If you just turn on Fox News, you're going to hear that at least once an hour. If you turn on right-wing radio, fraud, waste, and abuse. Back when Trump was having all the trials, what was it that we heard? It's a sham. The weaponization of the Justice Department. Scam, sham trials. It's all bogus. Every one of those trials should have gone, should have had a conviction. But if you watch right-wing radio or news, yeah, this is all a sham. They always said the same thing. If you interviewed Republicans on the street, they have the word down, sham, weaponization of the Justice Department. They learn their words and they repeat them.
Actually, you want to have a classic example of what we're talking about as to how MAGA changes its mind. Mayor Adams, when the corruption came down, oh, he's a Democrat. He's horrible. And this is typical of the Democrats, blah, blah, blah. And so the Department of Justice files charges against him. And then all of a sudden, Adams is able to basically flatter Trump enough to get him to tell the DOJ to lay off. And all of a sudden, oh, it was politically motivated. The Democrats never liked him. I mean, it's scary. It's totally scary. And this is why you've got DOJ, the attorneys for the DOJ that resigned, like about seven or eight of them over the course of 2 days. These were conservatives. They were not liberals by any stretch of the imagination. They were people, all the liberals had pretty much quit when Biden left. You know, any of them that had significant positions. And these people were saying, we can't dismiss charges because you made a deal. There is significant evidence of bribery, attempt of bribery in this thing, among other charges. And half of his cabinet or whatever the equivalent is of a mayor, well, they're facing charges and they're going down the tubes. But Adams gets off because he flattered Trump and he's going to basically ignore the sanctuary of laws of New York City and the state of New York and help with the policy as if he was MAGA.
And they want to deport the immigrants from their jails.
Right. Yeah. It's I don't think he has a chance of winning re-election, especially with Cuomo in the race. Cuomo's not my favorite guy, but he's probably going to win it. But either way, I don't think Adams is even in second place. I think he's in like third or fourth at this point. So New York's not going to re-elect him, but a lot of damage is going to be done in the meantime. And that, you know, whereas the guy probably should be in jail. Now, I don't, you know, maybe there was weakness in the evidence, but eight prosecutors, all of them Republicans, said, no, this case needs to be prosecuted. It's just, and everybody saying, oh, you Democrats never liked Adams. I want to go back and find the people actually on my blog who were saying that, you know, talking about how bad Adams was when they thought they were just attacking the Democratic Party. I'm actually now motivated to do that.
Okay. And do you remember 6 months ago, the only thing that Trump's supporters talked about was the price of eggs? You know, the thing they don't want to talk about today, the price of eggs, because they've gone higher.
Yeah. Yeah. You heard it 6 months ago. Oh, it's all Biden's fault. And now all of a sudden they get nuanced. Well, it's a complex interaction between the markets and the bird flu and blah, blah, blah. It's bizarre. I mean, I'm accused of TDS because I didn't like the way he treated Zelensky. I'm accused of TDS because, you know, all of a sudden everybody came out a week ago when Zelensky said, sure, a ceasefire. I've been trying to push for one for 3 years, but yeah, what the hell? If you can get a ceasefire, please do it. You know, now that Putin's not going to do it, he's agreed to a limited one where they're not attacking each other's infrastructure. And then hours later, his military attacked the Ukrainian grid. And then he just lied about it, just like he lied about, you know, having invaded Crimea, and even for the first week lied about the 2022 invasion. But Trump will not challenge him. And so when I suggest maybe Trump is compromised there somehow, TDS.
Right. And amazing thing, too, you just brought up the point 6 months ago, the whole world outside of Russia was behind Zelensky until the White House meeting with Trump and Vance. Now the Republican side thinks Zelensky is a crook. He's taking a lot of money and I've read stories. He's bought yachts. He's bought these mansions. He's sending money on the offshore accounts. All complete fabrications, but it's coming from right-wing media sources that don't fact-check anything and put out lies. And the Trump derangement syndrome people believe anything they're told.
Yeah. No, it's really bad. So I mean, and on top of it, I get into debates with people, and if they start to feel defensive about the debate, like they don't have their facts or, you know, can't really argue, they bring up, well, what about Hunter Biden and the laptop emails?
Whataboutism?
Whataboutism? And at this point, I accuse him of BDS. Biden's not in power anymore. Right. Hunter isn't even a thing. And by the way, that prosecutor that Biden helped oust, he'd closed the file by ousting him on Burisma. By ousting that prosecutor, he was taking a chance that the next prosecutor would reopen it again, which he did briefly when Trump was trying to shake down Ukraine, for the missiles to get dirt on Biden. He reopened it, said there's nothing here, and closed it again. And on top of it was allegations of a bribery whether or not they were true, that took place years before Hunter Biden was even involved. And yet they are obsessed with it. They're obsessed with the laptop, with the emails and
emails, Hunter Biden's laptop.
As I've said on this show, my basic take on it is that Hunter Biden was a BS artist. I think if anybody should be suing, it was Burisma and anybody else who believed that he could actually get access to Biden. He got him a 10 minute conversation on the tarmac of an airport that didn't go anywhere. Right. So so why are you making a big deal of Hunter Biden? It was there. So I turned around. I say, that's BDS, Biden. They do not want, and to even bring him up when he's no longer in power, never will be again.
Ask your Republican friends, whatever happened to Roger Ailes? So, and then say, what happened to Tucker Carlson? I'm missing a few other ones. Megyn Kelly, whatever happened to her? And of course, Bill O'Reilly. What happened to Bill O'Reilly? These are the number one ranked people on Fox News, who they're gone. And that's that. And they move on to the next stooge. Now we have Jesse Waters there. And who's the guy who wears the tennis shoes?
It wasn't Jesse Waters. It was somebody else who was the one that Biden called a dumb son of a bitch.
That doesn't narrow down too much at Fox News. I'm sorry.
Well, he was the White House reporter. I think he's getting his own show.
Douchey.
Yeah.
It's Mark. Is it Gottfried or Gilfried? I'm sorry. I don't watch Fox News outside of a YouTube thing.
I stopped. I don't have cable anymore. And I used to watch it. Honestly, the first thing I noticed about why I didn't like to watch it, it wasn't even the politics. It's that they yell. I mean, I'm right here in the living room. I can hear you. You don't have to yell at me. And,
that's why it's so popular.
I mean, and unfortunately, MSNBC decided, they want to be the anti-Fox, right? The one that appeals to the stuff. And they don't all yell. Not everybody yells. But they want to be the niche for the left-wingers. But left-wingers tend to prefer NPR, New Republic to television. So,
and they also just found out by trying to MSNBC to go out in the niche audience, being the elitist, the educated. Fox News dumbs it down and makes it angry, and that's half of America. That's why their news ratings are higher than the other three cable companies combined. I should say cable news companies. So
I agree. But this whole idea of TDS, it's like whenever, you get into a debate with somebody about racism, if they're kind of right wing, they'll say, oh, you're playing the race card. And it's like, sometimes people do misuse it in the rest, but just because I brought it up doesn't mean I'm playing the race card. Sometimes I want to talk about a racist incident or something like that's happening. It's, but it's something when you've got something that you can label it, and the left has its own versions of it. The left has all of its isms and things like that. But the Trump derangement syndrome is just something that you say when you're your default. If you're losing, that's your default.
Right. I get that. Like, I hear that from a lot of my Facebook acquaintances.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anytime you bring it up, I mean, they will say that, oh, he's not going to do it. If you give him total power, he's going to be benevolent. I mean, you know, it's you've just got Trump derangement syndrome. But as I'm saying, first of all, Trump is not a nice guy. But even if he was, total power will corrupt. That's what it does. That's part of human nature, at least in this present time.
And I'll let you hear one thing up. December 2020, after Trump lost the election in November 2020, everyone at the White House and everyone in the Trump's inner circle said, he's going to come around. He will concede. We will have a peaceful transition of power. No. So no and no. Leading up to January 6th, which right now the Trump derangement people are trying to whitewash that. They were patriots. They weren't trying to overthrow democracy. They were patriots.
No. So and you can't even talk about, Jeff Clark and the attempt to install him into the DOJ and all it took a revolt, a mutiny to do that. They don't even want to hear it. Letter,
just for the record, I wrote him a letter saying, why are you not in Guantanamo? Why are you not in Guantanamo Bay? Because that's where we take terrorists, including domestic terrorists. And you try to overthrow democracy. Never heard back from him, shockingly.
All right. Well, I think that we've exhausted that topic and we've run out of time anyway. But we will we'll be discussing similar topics in the future. That brings us to predictions. Pardon me. Let me say this again. This brings us to predictions. Matthew, what do you have?
I've got some very simple predictions, and it's a trend line. They always say the trend is your friend unless it's going against you. Right now, we're going to have chaos in Washington, D.C. Expect that for the next few weeks. Two, I look for Democratic people. I'd love to see our Congressman Jared Huffman go over to Shasta County and do a town hall and invite the local Republican congressman who will not show up and have Jared Huffman do a town hall in Shasta County. My next prediction is going to be the stock market's going to continue to decline. Tesla stock's going to continue to tank. Keep in mind, Tesla could still fall 90% and it'll still be overvalued. So let's keep that in mind. I want to put pressure on Elon.
That's right. It's kind of hard when you have a, president who says, don't buy EVs, but buy Teslas. Anyway. All right. Well, my prediction, I'm going to make a general one because I'm one of the few people who actually thinks that the poll that have the Democrats being at their lowest point in a long time is actually going to help them. Right now, Chuck Schumer is at 24% in the latest poll approval rating because he's not doing anything. He canceled his book tour because he was afraid that people were going to show up to protest. Right. However, Bernie Sanders is at an amazing 69% approval rating. I've never even seen that before. He is showing up in Republicans, and he's always done this. He was never afraid to show up on Fox News, but they are taking it to the Republicans in the way they have when they don't have any institutional power. My prediction is, because of this, Tim Walz is doing the same thing. He's at a 52% approval rating. I believe that the Democrats are going to be forced at this point to take more aggressive action, or they're going to face primary challenges, just as Republicans have in the past. Okay. We'll find out if any of this happens, but until next time, stay informed and stay engaged.